Welcome back to episode 9 of the podcast. This week we'll be discussing using ChatGPT to become the ultimate photographer, keeping up with trends and the cultural zeitgeist, as well as looking at YouTube reviewers, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of that good stuff, as well as answering some questions from the community. And I'm joined yet again by Rob. Hello, Rob.
Howdy.
We've just finished editing or re-editing a job for a client. We had to add some extra bits we weren't prepared to add, so we've just sorted those out this morning. So we're running a bit behind schedule. We're on a 2-podcast day today, and I've got a haircut in the middle of them, so what could possibly go wrong? Now, Rob, you're probably more familiar with how ChatGPT works, but this was a question from Louis in our Facebook group, and I thought it was quite an interesting one because everyone's talking about AI and how it's going to take our work away from us as photographers, but this was from a different perspective, and he says, here's a theory. What are people's thoughts on like asking ChatGPT how to become a photographer, for example? I'm oversimplifying this question here. And instead of having to pay for education, you just get it straight from ChatGPT. Well, I think that's quite an interesting question. And I have gone and asked ChatGPT how to become a top commercial photographer in the UK. And I believe, and correct me here if I'm wrong, Rob, ChatGPT will scour its knowledge base and pull out from there. So let's see what ChatGPT has to offer us. So we need to develop our skills and portfolio. That's technical mastery, learning technical aspects of photography, including lighting, composition, camera settings, and post-processing. You need to specialize, decide on a niche within commercial photography, such as fashion, product, advertising, or corporate photography. It's interesting it doesn't know the difference between commercial and advertising and the fact that they're the same, but that, you know, it's not bad. Build a portfolio, create a strong portfolio showcasing your best work, focus on quality over quantity, and ensure your portfolio reflects your specialization. Pretty good so far. Next up, gain experience. Assist established photographers, yeah? I'm game for that. Collaborate with agencies and brands. That doesn't work. Take on diverse projects, which is counterintuitive to what it's previously said and also, I'd say, incorrect. Invest in equipment. Invest in high-quality cameras, lenses, lighting equipment, and editing software. I disagree with that. If possible, set up a studio space. I disagree with that. Understand the business side. Absolutely. Pricing and contracts. Learn how to price your services competitively. I disagree with that. And create contracts to protect yourself legally. I wouldn't be doing that. Client relationships. Build strong relationships with clients. Deliver high-quality work. Yeah, why not? Marketing and branding, create a strong personal brand, including a professional website, logo, you don't need a logo, and consistent branding across all platforms, sure. Market yourself effectively, go on then. Online presence, absolutely. Networking, yep. SEO and advertising, no. Stay updated and innovate. Yeah, fair enough. Build a strong reputation, expand your network. Adapt to market changes, maintain consistency and professionalism. So I would say that is 90% correct.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to follow that to the letter, I think you'd do okay, to be honest.
You'd absolutely do okay. So yes, you can ask ChatGPT how to become a photographer. Now, see, I'd imagine it's going to be 6,000 people listening to this podcast. I've just told you all exactly what ChatGPT has told you to go and do. I guarantee you no one does it. And this is why educators exist. So I tell pretty much every photographer, no, I don't tell them the same thing, but they're all doing the same thing. They all get told something different though, because the trick is finding out what they need to hear in order to do what's needed to be done.
Like the Oracle in the Matrix.
Exactly. So you don't necessarily go, right, you need to go and do this. You work out what that individual's needs are. I mean, if you're a blank canvas person, which none of you are, none of us are, but if you are like the blank canvas and you've never, I don't know, had anything happen in your life that has made you any different to like blueprint human, sure, this would probably get you there. But most of us, we have things we like, things we dislike. Mm-hmm. We have bias. We have reasons why we do things, reasons why we don't do things. So a lot of it is like, most people, you can split up into two camps. They're either working towards something or working away from something. So you're either somebody who's working toward being rich or someone who's working away from being poor. It's the same thing, but the way in which you engage that person is completely different. And then a lot of the times with photographers, I am trying to undo what they've learned. So they'll have listened to loads of stuff on the internet, have loads of like opinions on how things work. And from that, we will then have to try and persuade them to do it differently. It's very hard to, when someone's been doing something a certain way the whole life, trying to get them to change is very difficult. So yes, for sure, you can use ChatGPT to find out all that information. You can then go deeper into it by, you know, these, they're giving me 10 bullet points here, and each point's got several points. You could then go ChatGPT each point, get more information. But the problem is some of these are fundamentally wrong. And you're then learning something that's wrong. And our industry is so specialized and so niche, there is no book out there that you can go and read to learn how to do it.
No, but I think with some of these, for example, go and gain experience, you know, assist established photographers, that will immediately feed into, oh, hang on, this is different to ChatGPT, but this is someone actually doing the real world work. Now I can see how this works. So it's kind of pointing you in the wrong direction, but down the right road, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's close, but it's not right. And I can't imagine how advanced a computer would have to be to, one, get the, first of all, get the right information, which is not the case here. But it's feasible that they can get the right information. Getting a human to follow that is the difficult bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we do one-to-one mentorships in 3-month blocks. And the difference between people who join is like someone who's who knows nothing about photography is so easy. You tell them what to do, they go and do it. Well, I've had 3 photographers now get signed to an agent within the first year of owning a camera because they don't have all these like opinions and bias and like useless knowledge. I then spend 3 months with somebody who's been doing it for 15 years trying to convince them to do one thing. And maybe after 3 months they do it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not going to be helped by...
As Yodi said, you must learn that which you have learned.
Exactly. It's, I remember actually I worked in a very fancy bar as a student, and they wouldn't employ anyone who'd worked in a bar before because they wanted everything doing their way. And they said it was so much more difficult to stop somebody doing it the way they'd always done it.
It's easier to train than retrain.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to remove the role of educators, because educating is more than just dumping information. All information is out there, but whether you can digest it yourself or not is a different matter.
And again, like, as good as ChatGPT is becoming, it still is programmed by a human. And there's so much information and disinformation out there, let's be honest, that's being presented as fact, that you have to use a bit of common sense to kind of separate the two.
Yeah. I'm just asking a question here in ChatGPT. How much does a commercial photographer in the UK charge per day? So we're going to see what it comes up with. That's pretty good, actually. Entry level, $250 to $500 a day.
So yeah, agree with that, yeah.
Mid-level, $500 to $1,200. Yeah. High-end, $1,200 to $3,000 plus. Yeah, that's pretty good. So, you know, there's stuff you can ask it here, but also you need to know the question.
And then you need to know, which one are you?
Yes. And this is the difficult bit. I've had people come in saying the entry level when the high end, and people saying the high end when they're barely at the bottom of entry level. It's interesting. And obviously it will change and it will become very different over the years. But, you know, there's no reason to have a sports coach. All the information for that is out there. It's science. It's all in journals. But you need a coach to make sure you're doing
it. And let's face it, Google's been around for time now.
Yeah.
And it's what becomes pop culture. You don't search for things on the internet anymore. You just Google it. That's what people say.
Yeah.
It's become the ipso facto search engine. So all that information, ChatGPT, all that has done is trawled it from all the millions of pages on Google and just presented it to you. It's a little bot that you've sent off to do you the work for you. But all the information is already and has been already out there in Google. You can find that same information without ChatGPT. It's just very fast.
Yes, but I would say that whenever I've tried to learn something on Google at like a high level in photography, most of the information has been fundamentally incorrect. From the basics up.
Well, as you will know, if you're good at something, you don't give it away for free.
Yeah, quite.
Hence the reason you have mentorships. And as you said before, a lot of the good information that you found over the years was from buying somebody's book.
Yeah, buying books, speaking to people. There's no good information for free. There's always a cost to it. And whether that's time, data, or money, there's always a cost to good information. But yeah, I mean... I don't think it's going to replace educators ever.
No, nothing will. I mean, what's next? And there's no schools because they want to sit at these children 8 hours a day on ChatGPT. It's not going to be a thing.
No, but I mean, it is an interesting, like, I'd say it's a more, it's a bigger threat to this than there is to AI taking over photography work.
Yeah, because all ChatGPT is doing here is presenting information based on a question. You can't ask it, what do McDonald's want for an advert?
Exactly.
It doesn't know. It can only tell you, well, this is what McDonald's are doing right now. And it's the creativity is the part that computers can never replace.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what people are paying for. That's what the money's there for. Which kind of segues nicely into keeping up with trends and the cultural zeitgeist, which is something I get asked a lot. And I'm going to read the whole thing out. So this is from Matt. And it says, you've talked about needing to keep your finger on the pulse. How do you go about changing your test shoots material with this in mind? Has it mostly been about how you've changed lighting, framing, or products? Have you been changing backgrounds, props, color palettes, etc. to keep up? So it's none of those things. It's never camera settings. It's never lighting setups. It's never anything like that. That's just how we...
It's a means to an end.
Record it, yeah. Keeping up with what's going on in the world is just something you do. And this is a half you're going to go, that's no use at all. And that half are not doing it. And they're just not engaged in popular culture. And it's, you have to, if you're not engaged in popular culture, it's going to be very difficult to make work that's on trend. Like, if you don't understand that the Y2K trend is coming to an end already, and you're just about to shoot a portfolio like that, you've missed it. If you didn't even know the Y2K trend was a trend, like, you know, you need to be aware of these things, but also you don't need to be a slave to it. Like, I didn't shoot any Y2K work. I was aware of it. I knew it was going on, but I didn't go and create a portfolio like it because I didn't want to. But you do need to understand it, and you do need to be able to have conversations about it, and you do need to be able to link your work to it. So in terms of, you know, how do you go about changing your test shoots based on it? There's not like a hard answer. And I think a lot of YouTube is like, I want a question and an answer. And this is like, how do I change my test shoots? I'm about to shoot an entirely new body of work, which I've been meant to have been shooting since January, but like work's got in the way. So in the next 2 weeks, I'll be starting it. And how do I make it look different, new, fresh, and all the rest of it? I don't necessarily worry about that. I don't like, because I know that I am aware of the cultural trends. So I don't sit down and go, here is a cultural trend. Here's my new body of work. Let's take the lighting they've used, that wide angle lens that's in trend at the moment. And like, I don't think like that. I just go, I'm aware of all this information. What do I want to create? And knowing that I'm kind of up to date on what's going on in the world as much as I can be as a nearly 40-year-old, I then just go and create it. I don't know. What do you do? Do you?
Yeah, it's the same. Like, I mean, certainly in the movie world, for example, back in the day, everything was shot on more or less the same film stock. So every film kind of had a similar look. And then Transformers comes along and now everything's orange and teal.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fortunately seems to be kind of sticking around much longer than it deserved to be. But if you look at, I mean, actually not so much more movies, but if you look at TV shows now, you know, they're very much sort of moving away from that, but still a very sort of stylized sort of color palette that you see in things. And again, it's just, if you look at the progression of TV shows, you know, from the early noughties, you know, sort of up to today, there's been a definite shift in the way things now look.
Yeah, there was a phase about 10 years ago where everything was shot on gimbals and like got motion sickness watching a TV show.
It's like anytime there's a new tool, I mean, it was sliders.
Yeah.
That was a big thing because as soon as they became affordable, everybody shot on a slider. Yeah, as gimbals became something reasonably costed, everybody had one and everybody shoots on gimbal. And then oh my God, then became the handheld shaky cam Hong Kong action.
Yeah.
It's giving me a tumor watching this because it's just so heavy on the eyes and it's impossible to keep track of what's actually going on screen. And that was actually more down to not the way they were shooting things, but because they had actors who could not do action at all. So we'll just move the camera really fast and you can't see
the back.
Can't do anything. So that became a product of that. And then fortunately, that trend has died a death.
Yeah, and I think, you know, trends go full circle, don't they? Because a lot of films at the moment are using a lot of very big static shots.
Yeah.
There's a lot of space and breathing room. So we've gone through the generation of, like, unless there's action every 0.01 seconds, I'm switching off. And now there's almost like a counter move. It's all going on, but there's like a counter movement to that of, like, really slow.
Yeah.
Very big, expansive, empty shots in cinematography, which I love. I love a good...
If you look at the, you know, the golden era of cinema, as we'll call it, the reason everything looked that way is because those cameras weighed 50 to 75 kilograms.
Yeah, they're good for that.
You know, I mean, you know, the camera operator had to be built like Arnie if he was going to move that camera and walk around with it.
Yeah.
So everything was done on dolly tracks and trucks, because that's the only way you could move a camera of that weight, and hence things didn't tend to move very much.
No, but I think it looks good as well. I don't think you need... I mean, it's all down to the narrative as well, isn't it? And the style. I mean, Wes Anderson's shots are beautiful, and they are either parallel slides, but like huge slides, or static. And it's like you can pause a movie at any point and it's a photograph.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. Whereas a lot of these, you know, back in the day, everything shot at f1.2 on a gimbal, just moody orange teal.
You've got the 5D Mark II, your favourite camera of all time, to thank for that.
Well, yeah, that was in there, you know, with its hacked raw filming.
Because again, everybody was, at the time, was using, you know, 35mm film. And then all of a sudden, this, again, relatively, and certainly in the cinema world, affordable camera, that everyone bought a 50mm 1.8 lens for £80,
slapped
it onto a 5D Mark II and said, oh, look at the depth of field I've got. Oh, beautiful.
But it's interesting, though. So on YouTube at the moment, talking head videos and short form content is dying. And the new wave of YouTube content is like hour long documentaries, like shot by just individuals, like just someone like me just going, right, I'm going to shoot a documentary for an hour or tell one of my stories for an hour. And it's all like beautiful cinematography, very carefully done. Yeah. Nice voiceovers, very slow, very like, not just like bang, 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 like the Peter McKinnons of the world, where it's like, jump out of a helicopter, gimbal shot, drone shot. Everyone's like, yeah, no, we're done with that. We're finished. I want to sit down and watch. Because people use YouTube now as Netflix pretty much, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have Prime. I have Netflix. I have Disney. I don't really watch any of them.
Yeah.
I'd say 80% of my time is spent on things, looking for things on YouTube. And I tend to use it while I'm working editing as a podcast, which is why I actually look for longer form content, because I don't have to keep changing and look for something else every 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, an hour, that's great. I'll leave that on for an hour.
So what I found, though, and I don't like this person's podcast, but if I listen to YouTube long form for long enough, it brings me to Linus Tech Tips podcast, The WAN Show.
Yeah.
Like everything leads to that. I don't know how he's like hacked YouTube to like whatever it is, it ends up on one of his podcasts.
Well, it's back to the old algorithm again.
Yeah.
I mean, mine led me down the route to Mark Calloway's podcast, that was The Undertaker, famously, for the better part of 30 years in the WWE. So I ended up in a wrestling podcast. And he's great. He's got 6 feet under. Check it out, by the way.
Oh, I'm having a listen to that. And it's, it's called sleeping content. So it's content that people fall asleep to. It's very lucrative on YouTube.
Oh, just like 8-hour ASMR rain in a forest.
Yeah, I go for some of that. I bought over that. I can't sleep in silence. I have to have, like, I have earphones in with like white noise playing in the background. In terms of keeping up with stuff, like, you just have to be engaged in the world and not become one of those people. And it happens to everyone once they hit about 30, I think, where you just go, yep, that's my era. I'm now in that. You've got to, like...
I understand it completely. I mean, as you well know, musically,
yeah,
in terms of my musical taste, I haven't moved past 1987.
Yeah. Which is coincidentally when I was one.
Thanks for making me feel a little bit...
That's right.
So because, again... While I'm aware of new music, because I do listen to actual new music, because I tend to listen to things on the radio rather than playing things from Spotify, because again, you hear new things. I just don't happen to like most of it. That's the thing. But at least I'm aware of it. And I think that's where you have to get to the point of be aware of what's going on, even if it's not your personal taste, but be aware of this is where things are going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when things move from hair metal to grunge to nu metal, there were three very distinct eras in music, you know, about a decade apart. But think, you know, there was definitely a cultural shift. I mean, I remember Nirvana was particularly the one. I was an eligible young late teenager at this point. And if you had any interest in meeting a young lady, you had to pretend at least to like Nirvana.
Yeah.
Because if you did not, she would not entertain a single moment of your time.
Yeah, I think my girlfriend Holly was into Nirvana quite a bit, actually.
They all were.
I don't mind Nirvana. I like some of their earlier stuff.
I do think they're quite overrated, I'll be honest.
I'd agree to that. It's interesting, actually. Holly asked me the other day, she was reading an article in the Times or something, I think it was. And she was like, Scott, do you know what shoegaze is? And I was like, yeah, why? She's like, oh, it's referencing it here, and I don't know what it means. And she's like, how do you know what shoegaze music is? And I was like, how do you not know what shoegaze music is? It was like 15 years ago. But obviously, again, like, she didn't need to know about all these different things and just switched off at this point. She's like, do you like shoegaze? And I was like, I like it when I'm driving. I was like, but if I'm tired, then no. If I'm tired, then we go for some like hardcore 90s hip hop, really loud.
Yeah. Like, if you're in an elevator, you want a bit of acid jazz, you know. Yeah, it's your situation.
I do my morning commute with Radio 4 on. Oof. I do my drive home with Radio 3 on, because it's got some weird abstract classical music playing at that sort of time of day. It goes a bit off piece,
especially if you're doing the children's run and you bumper to bumper traffic.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been loving this since we've got the puppy. I don't do the school drop off in the morning at the moment because he can't go in because he'll flatten a child. So I come straight to work and I miss rush hour. And I leave slightly after rush hour, so I don't have any traffic. I just like cruise around in my Subaru, which I'm loving because I can now mount curbs like a boss, which I couldn't do in the Merc. So that's a nice thing. If, like, you know, there's a junction and you can't quite, I know you're not supposed to do it, but keep the traffic flowing, just mount the curb. Whereas, otherwise I'd hit the bump.
It is a literal Tonka toy.
Yeah, it does look like one, doesn't it? So YouTube reviews, camera reviews. Philip Bloom's name came into this, so here we go.
Yep.
What do you think of YouTube reviewers? I don't believe any of the big ones except Philip Bloom. So I'm going to give you my hot take on this first, including on Philip Bloom, and then let you do yours afterwards. I don't think any of them are of any use whatsoever to 99% of people, including Philip Bloom. Because Philip Bloom could well go and review a bit of kit, but the chances of me needing it in the same way that he needs it, or appreciating it in the same way that he appreciates it, are slim to nil. No matter how good the review is, it might be 100% accurate for them as a working professional, but unless I'm doing the same work as them and I can't find a YouTuber that does the same work as me, it's kind of meaningless. What do you reckon to reviews?
Well, it all depends what you're hoping to get from the review. You know, if, for example, I decided one day that I want to be a fashion photographer, right, what camera do I need for this? I'm asking the wrong question of YouTube.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's... If you've decided that, you know, you're looking for a device that does X, Y, Z, you know, you have quite a niche that you need to work with, and you've decided that this is probably the better kit for me, what can it technically do? Then someone like Gerald Undone, for example, is a fabulous resource for things like that. Because he will give you, nut and bolt level of the technical abilities of this. But there's nothing to say about, you know, creativity, and, you know, we'll always come back to that. And it's definitely is channels for people that are interested in the technical abilities of things. Now, and again, Philip Bloom, as you know, I do enjoy his content because it's just a bit different to everybody else.
It's
like 9 months later, he'll come out with a review of something that everyone jumped on the minute the embargo is lifted. You know, and with the best will in the world, you don't know within 24 hours how good a bit of kit is. You know, you have to work with it for some time, which is why I enjoy Philip's channel. However, I view his content as entertainment because I find him, you know, he's a very, very engaging person. I enjoy watching his content. Do I find it useful? Not really.
Yeah.
In terms of, it doesn't help me decide whether I would or wouldn't want to buy a particular piece of kit. I just find his take on it in his use case and what he does very interesting.
Yeah, and I think, like, having just recently bought, I think recently, how long have I had the Fuji for? 6 months?
Yeah, about that.
I watched a load of reviews on that beforehand, and none of the reviews flagged up any of the issues I'm having with the camera. And that's not issues in, like, it's broken or not working properly. It's just, like, in the way that it doesn't function for professionals.
Yes.
None of them picked this up. And, I mean, the image quality is better, but none of them really explained it in the way that it actually was better.
No, but then, I mean, that's the way with a lot of tech, for example. If we look at these Black Magics that we're shooting on today, for example, as you know, I was an early adopter. As soon as they launched the Pocket 4K, I knew immediately that at least spec for spec, this is something that work that will probably work for me. And it has, and it's continued to do so, and they've been absolutely great. And likewise, my purchase earlier this year, which is the first flying camera that I ever bought, which was the the drone. Again, when they released that, the Mini 4 Pro, again, just looking at what's changed, I'm like, oh, now we're shooting in log, and now it's 10-bit. Now it's time to pull the trigger on it. You know, now I've got something I can probably cut together with the Pocket 4Ks, and you've seen a couple of bits that we've done here.
Good.
And you can match them up really well. So finally there was that, and people say, yeah, but when the Mini 5 comes... You will never buy anything with that mentality because there will always be something new because they already have probably the next 4 to 5 already lined up. They're just incrementally. And every so often, there'll be one thing that steps you forward.
I think the other thing with these reviews is, so let me, I'm going to get onto the old Google. I'm going to Google the price of a Canon. What's the latest one? R5?
It's the R1, actually.
R1. How much are these going for? Oh, my word, £7,000.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so we go to MPB. And then, so that's a great camera. There'll be nothing, you know, that'll be a great camera. For £7,000, I could buy, well, not that. I could, keep scrolling. I could buy, as a studio photographer, a IQ1 80 megapixel medium format back from phase one, a phase one body and 3 lenses, which will be, in terms of pure image quality, not burst rate and all the rest of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But is it
considerably better? And I don't hear YouTubers mentioning that on reviews of stills cameras.
No, but and this is where you kind of have to read between the lines a bit. Again, it's what question you're asking really of these reviewers. It's like, you know, we're doing a review today of the new, R1. Okay, am I looking for a 30 frame a second, indestructible, waterproof camera, or am I not? Am I looking for the best image quality I can buy for X amount of money?
What's the big high res Canon? Is that the R5?
Yes.
Oh, I've got a Mark II.
You've got a few of them.
Oh, there you go. So for the same price as the R5 Mark II, you can get a phase 180 megapixel, which will just... In terms of stills.
Yeah.
And for portraits especially.
But again, you know, that will shoot raw video, etc. It's 8K, da-da-da.
Yeah.
So do you need that, yes or no? And this is the questions you have to ask yourself. What do I need from something?
Exactly.
And then what's the best version of that? Because it's, for the same money spent, you've got two very different use cases there.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. One completely useless as a run-and-gun camera.
Yeah.
and the other one just not as good in terms of image quality for commercial advertising.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, actually, as you know about Kit. My Fuji does video, doesn't it?
I believe so.
Do you know if it's any good?
I'd imagine it would be good, but I've never actually tested it. Now, and again, maybe the usability is probably what will let it down more than the actual video quality.
Yeah. I just, you know, the Blackmagic's good, but could I have one camera to rule them all?
I mean, again, you could.
I'd need to buy a lens, though, wouldn't I?
You need to buy a lens.
That'd be a couple of grand.
And again, once you get used to a certain system, like I've been using Blackmagic since 2019 now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a bit of a relative dinosaur on that front. And I was doing working on a short film earlier this week for somebody else. I was brought in as the director of photography. And they asked me to use their camera, which is the Panasonic S1H. I absolutely hated it. Like I can't begin to tell you how much I dislike everything about that camera. Trying to find anything in a menu, it's impossible.
Yeah, that
but again, that's down to my lack of familiarity with that particular camera. But once you get used to something like a Blackmagic that's so simple, shoots internal 12-bit RAW, like it's just the basic things, because it is only a video camera. Yes, there is a button that does allow you to take a still, but you just never would.
I didn't know that. There we go.
Yeah, it comes up as a DNG. There you go. So you can take a still frame. But because there's no way to trigger any off-camera flash, there's no hot shoe or sync port, whatever, that you cannot call it a stills camera.
Yeah. But
because it's fundamentally made just for use with video, it's so intuitive and so simple to use. And that's the thing I find where most of these hybrid cameras all fall down. Like Sony, for example, had the A7 S3, I believe, and then they brought out the FX3, literally the same camera internally, but just all the buttons laid out with a metal body with
quarter-inch
points on it.
Yeah.
To make it more video-centric, and the menu was set up to be more video-centric.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's really difficult at the moment because video is getting so much better. And I do recommend, because I have a lot of one-to-one people I work with who are mixed media, that do stills in video. And I do tell them to buy the R5 because it is the best all-round do whatever you can do. Mm-hmm. Top-notch video-ish and top-notch stills-ish. It's not the best at either, but it's good enough at both.
Yeah, if you need, you know, something that does both, then
it's like the Swiss Army knife of of Swiss Army knives, for those on the video. I've now moved to a Swiss, this is a weird segue. I've now moved to a Swiss Army knife away from a, what was it even before? A Leatherman.
Yeah.
Because you can't carry the Leatherman around. I was constantly worried about leaving
because it has a locking blade. It's
not a locking blade. It's illegal. So I can have it in work. I can transport it to and from work. Cause I use it for work daily. But I can't, like, if I accidentally go to the pub afterwards with a knife in my pocket, it's not going to go well. So that was a bit of a pain. So I've swapped for this. The Swiss Army knife and its whole saying is utterly pointless. It is useless. It is absolute, compared to a Leatherman, this does nothing. It breaks your nails off trying to get any of the bits out. None of the bits are strong enough to do anything. It doesn't have pliers. And the pliers, I didn't realize I use them every day.
Yep.
The knife isn't as sharp or as strong. It just...
It's a fairly decent corkscrew.
If I don't drink wine. I can only drink this really niche North Spanish river wine because anything else gives me heartburn. I have really like boring medical thing here, but I have problems with it from medication until years ago. So I can have coffee, chocolate, or wine, but I can't have all of them. So I choose coffee, and that way I'm absolutely fine. But if I start throwing in wine to the mix, it's hellish. I'm off for a wedding next week, which will definitely be wine fueled. So that's gonna be fun. But Swiss Army knife. What a false statement. Yes, it can do pretty much anything, but actually it can't.
All of it badly, though.
Like, what are these tweezers going to do?
Well, you get a splinter from carving your tree down.
Yeah, it's just, I don't, anyway, Swiss Army knife's rubbish. I do like the aesthetic of it. It's a nice colour. That's all I've got. I don't know, are you a Swiss Army knife person? I don't imagine you've got a multi-tool of some sort. What have you got?
Leatherman, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
You buy the one that works.
Yeah. So if you're looking for one, get a Leatherman, but just don't accidentally leave it in your pocket.
Yes, yeah. Make sure it stays in a toolbox and not upon your person.
Yeah, so now I have to carry a box in my car. So I do have a toolbox in my car at all times because I drive a 23-year-old car. So you never quite know when part of it's going to fall off.
I mean, it's Japanese, so not very often.
No, although I did just drive to Scotland and back, which was 1,200 miles. And at some point I stopped somewhere and I went to drive and it was like, I didn't feel like I had much power. One of the boost pipes had disconnected because it got so hot. So I had to redo that, which I used my Leatherman for.
See, functional tools first.
Yeah, I don't know. But there we go. Tools are important. And I think it's not by chance that every photographer in the UK, every assistant has a Leatherman on set. Because
it works.
Yeah, the screwdriver is the right size for the base plate on every camera. The knife is knifey and the pliers can like undo anything you've jammed.
Yeah.
It's just great. It's a great bit of kit. Gutted, I can't. I don't know. Maybe I'll find. Maybe is it like? Let me know in the comments if there's a better version than a Swiss Army knife that is UK legal, so I don't have to constantly go, have I got an illegal weapon in my pocket today? But there we go. So next question up here is, what's been the best triggers for your most successful original work? And I think this again, it comes down to this whole like zeitgeist and all the rest of it. And this is one of those things that you can't work on. So you can't go, I'm going to work today and having better ideas. It's just being open to the ideas. So my entire ice cream series I shot like in 2019.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was all inspired by seeing a kid in the park with an ice cream melting over his hands. I did a series of summer drinks that was inspired by a photograph of my childhood of me drinking a Fanta lemon on some hot concrete soaked like Spanish city place. The fork series of food, I did four forks with food on them. That was just inspired by being bored of seeing plates of food.
But this is kind of getting back to what we touched on earlier about where something like ChatGPT can give you a guideline, but like your work ended up in a place because, you know, you're drawing from your childhood and things that inspired you and things exactly. That you thought, especially when it comes to food, because, you know, there's boring functional food and then there's food that you actually enjoy and have good memories about.
Exactly.
You know, and that it's that kind of inspired you. Now, somebody else wouldn't have been inspired by the little mini sausages and beans, you know, you're like, oh, I remember them and they were great.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that makes everybody that little bit different. And when it comes to, I mean, the phrase there, the question certainly about original work, it can only be original if it's from yourself, like singer-songwriters, for example. There's, you know, we both know many, many musicians.
We do indeed.
And again, you've got people that play covers technically brilliantly,
yeah,
and, you know, and even put their own kind of slant on it. But then it's very hard to find a really good songwriter. And again, unfortunately, the people with the worst lives have got some of the best songs, because yeah, that's where the inspiration and, you know, the pain, the misery of the things that you pour into a song. Often people use it as therapy. Certainly if you listen to any of Becky Edwards' recent material,
yep,
you know, it recently got out of a fairly bad relationship, but she got some great songs out of it, you know, and that's the thing.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing, actually, because I have a theory. This is a bit of a hot take here. Not to get cancelled. I have a theory that there's nobody who's successful in anything who's had an easy life. I don't think people with your average middle class, upper class, easy, straightforward going life are successful in many fields. I think they have a higher level of average success than other people, mm-hmm, but in terms of peak elite success, it doesn't happen. And that's not to say middle class and upper class people have easy lives. Obviously, there's the people within there who have narcissistic parents. Their parents die when they're children, or like whatever it may be. But I can't think of, out of all my friends who are successful, even the ones who look like they have an idyllic life, once you dig a little bit, there's always a reason why they work as hard as they do, and it's never healthy. There's no way to work as hard as you have to work to be successful in a healthy way, I don't think. That's my, I don't know.
No, I mean, because if you look at things, I mean, success, and particularly, as you say, that to be what a lot of people would at least traditionally call really successful, you've really got to put the work in. Then, you know, if you're thinking you can do a 9-to-5 and be, no,
yeah,
that's not going to be a thing. Now, to have the drive to go 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for a period of time to get yourself somewhere, you're looking to escape something.
Yeah, it's not a good life. Like, you know, when you see a friend who's like really working hard to be, you know, successful, that's not necessarily a good thing. It's a good outcome, but it's not a good,
yeah,
good source.
I was talking to somebody earlier in the week about Muay Thai, Thai boxing.
Yeah.
Now, and again, it's one of my, I was on the wish list and I'm definitely on the bucket list. I was supposed to have actually gone in 2020 and then I can't remember, something happened. We'll try and delve into that in case we get cancelled again. But I wanted to go, you know, the Saturday night fights in Bangkok.
Yeah.
Well, it starts off at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon with the kids. And then it works the way up then to basically Tong Po in the main event. But again, as soon as these children are able to walk, they start training, because it's the only way to escape,
yeah,
the village and the poverty is to get good at Muay Thai and money and escape that way. So again, all those years of training and scraping and clawing yourself up by fingernails, all of that is to escape something.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was away with some people I didn't really know recently. All well-to-do, you know, it seems to come from like nice backgrounds and all the rest of it. And they're all in cycling. And a couple of them are like, oh, I hate Lance Armstrong. He's a drugs cheat. He's this, he's that, he's the other and all the rest of it. I was like, he comes from an abused childhood, like from a poor place. And he went to Europe to make money and was told, if you take this drug, you don't have to go back home. Like, I'm not being funny, but I'd do the same. Like,
yeah.
Is it?
You know, and it's the old saying goes, you know, you walk a mile in his shoes, you know.
Exactly. It's very easy to go, oh, he cheated. Or whichever athlete it was, oh, they cheated. But like, what was the alternative?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, where I come from, most of my friends from childhood went to prison. Not all of them, but most of them did. So you either worked hard and got out or went to prison. Or some of the friends I made later as an older teenager, they're just still in the same place, like doing the same thing, which is fine if they're happy doing that. It's not for me, but you know, it's quite easy to be judgmental, I think, on people's bad choices.
Of course, without,
you know, but yeah, I think there's a certain level of toxicity required to be successful, and there's a reason why all photographers are difficult people. It's not,
yeah, and because we don't necessarily, although it massively helps, but you know, we don't have to be people, you know.
No.
Generally speaking, especially your use case where it's still life, you know, you're not photographing people, you're photographing still life. Well, you don't have to have a relationship with that bit of still life, and you don't have to.
Yeah, sometimes talk it's not even it. Illegal to have a relationship with that bit of still life, is it?
Well, in certain countries, you know.
Yeah. But no, and then of course, you know, you create a good body of work, you get signed, then you get thrown into these huge social situations. We've got like 15 people on set, and you're like, I don't want this.
Yeah, but you're allowed to be because you're now an artist.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, you have to be a bit quirky or they think there's something wrong with you.
That's true.
You know, you can't be a normally well-adjusted, functioning human being.
Yeah.
But like, what's wrong with him? Nothing. But that's the point. Yes. There's nothing wrong with him.
Yes.
We don't trust him.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I think, you know, it's an interesting industry. Everyone I meet in this industry is very interesting. All the photographers I represent are very nice, interesting people. And everyone I work with is nice as well. Don't tend to have dicks on set, do we?
No, but that's over time you've weedled that down to a nice nucleus.
There were at times some difficult customers, but we've removed those from the fray.
Yeah, the customers that feel the need to tell you that you're doing it wrong in front of the client on set when you're like,
yeah, they're not ideal. But yeah, there we go. That's kind of, I guess we're wrapping it up here for the day. But yeah, motivation, learning. You know, working hard.
just put in the work, you know, that's the thing, you know. It's like nothing worth having ever came easy.
No, and in terms of putting in the work, I've started a new working format of doing absolutely nothing followed by frantic work.
Yeah.
I tried for years to do consistent work and I'm not a consistent person.
No, and again, you've got people that can do that.
Yeah.
Then, like, for example, you know, go back to musician, for example. You can sit someone in the studio and say, I need a song.
Yeah.
And you're like, got nothing, mate.
Yeah.
And then you could be, you know, you could be in, you know, a local supermarket doing it, trying to, there it is.
Yeah.
Get the song now. It's just, you know, you're looking for that lightning bolt of inspiration. And then you're off, you know, you're off to the races. But you can't force that. No. Some people can be very good at it. Tony Iommi, actually, from Black Sabbath, was the greatest example. Probably one of their most famous tracks, Paranoid. Didn't even exist. They had like 10 tracks and the album people were like, yeah, we need one more. It's not quite long enough. What, we got anything? He's like, we've got an hour. And he's like...
he's so like, no more.
Especially as they're a riff-based band as well.
Yeah.
And within an hour, he came up with Paranoid and it was so good, they called the album after it and the rest is history.
There we go.
So, yeah, respect to Mr. Iommi.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can do like YouTube, I can do on like on demand. Like, I need to make 10 videos today, go and make 10 videos. But in terms of photography work, I've just wasted a lot of time creating for the sake of creating. So we're now doing short, intense burnout work followed by the crash and the burn.
That's right. But then but you need that period of separation to receive the lightning bolt.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to give it a year. And then see if it was just a really bad idea and then go back to what I was doing before.
Well, you know, it's working out pretty good so far. So let's say so.
See, I've done well at the rest period. I've done no shooting since... When did we last do a shoot?
Oh, it was the...
July?
The Waffles, yeah.
June?
I think June? I think it was July.
July.
I think early July, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not taking...
I'd have to check the date on the original files.
Yeah, I'm not taking a photo since then. But there we go. Anyway, we'll leave it there. I'll see you all next week. And yeah.
Ciao for now.
Bye-bye.